This is Movies for the Blind, Episode 39, Panic in the Streets, Part 2.
Could I have your attention? This is very important.
Hi there, and welcome to Movies for the Blind, where you can enjoy films without looking at a screen. I'm Valerie Hunter. We continue with part 2 of 3 of Panic in the Streets, which stars the man who hosted the Academy Awards the year this film was released, 1950. No, wasn't Richard Widmark, or Jack Palance, or even Zero Mostel, who I'll talk about later, but Paul Douglas, who plays Tom. Few people remember Paul Douglas these days, except maybe for the baseball comedy Angels in the Outfield, or the chick flick Letter to Three Wives, or maybe even for his Broadway work. He created the role of Harry Brock, Judy Holliday's gangster boyfriend in Born Yesterday, a role played in the movie by Broderick Crawford. Maybe one reason Douglas has been forgotten is that his career and life were tragically cut short when he died of a heart attack in 1959, at the age of just 52, the week he was supposed to do an episode of The Twilight Zone, written especially for him. But fortunately, his few films do live on, including this one, where his police captain, Tom, is at odds with a Navy doctor for the Board of Health, Clint, Richard Widmark, who's desperately trying to find who killed a man found dead in New Orleans carrying a form of the plague. Where we left off, the killer, Blackie, had ordered his lackey, Fitch, to stay in town because he thinks the dead man smuggled something valuable into the country and he wants to get his hands on it. Of course, what he doesn't know is that they already have it. So, here's part 2 of Panic in the Streets. Clint approaches a man.
Is this the Seaman's hiring hall?
Yeah, this is it. They're calling the ships now.
Thanks a lot.
With his hands deep in the pockets of a buttoned-up trench coat, Clint hesitantly climbs a few steps to the hall. He steps aside to allow a couple men to leave, then goes on, looking around intently. The hall is filled with dozens of men who mill around outside a dispatcher's open office.
On the Joseph Martin, this Yarrow Steamship Company, a Liberty ship, going to Rio, sailing at 7 in the morning. 2 ABs.
Some of the men hurry to the window by the dispatcher, making the announcements on a microphone.
We have 11:25 and 11:25.
Clint speaks to a squat older man outside the office.
They're going, they're gone.
And he leads Clint inside.
Do this guy a favor.
Thank you.
All right. On a steamship Pelican, Louisiana.
As the squat man leaves, Clint steps up to another man at a desk.
2 oilers.
Say, fella, do you mind if I make an announcement? Just take a second.
I have 11:28 and 11:29. They're going, they're going, they're gone.
Grab the mic a minute, Leo.
He takes it from the dispatcher and gives it to Clint.
Thanks very much.
Could I have your attention, please?
Could I have your attention? This is very important. I have some pictures of a man here. I'll pass them out right away.
He gives them to a man in the crowd.
Do you mind, sir?
And some to Leo.
Thank you.
Now, please take a good look at him. I'll pay $50 to anyone who can tell me anything at all about him. Anything. I'm not from the police, so you can't get into any trouble. I just want the information, and I'm willing to pay for it. Thank you very much.
Thanks an awful lot.
He sets down the mic.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, buddy.
Right.
Then he leaves the office and goes back into the crowd.
Okay, anybody that's ever seen this man, speak right up, will you?
I never saw him before. I never saw him either.
Anybody that can tell me anything at all, how about him?
He walks through with another photo of Kochak.
I've never seen him, Mac.
You got the dough on you, Johnny?
Can you tell me anything?
I can tell you're taking a terrific chance flashing that kind of door around this mob. Shipping is tough.
You can say that again.
I'm serious about this. Any information at all, even if you just think you've ever seen him.
What's this fella done, lad?
Nothing. There's no trouble.
Let me give you a bit of advice. These fellows are not liable to talk around here.
What do you mean?
He's ought to be a seaman, too.
That's right, bud.
Yeah, I got you. Thanks.
No trouble at all.
Look, if anybody knows anything about him, I'll be at Frank's place right next door here until...
He checks his watch.
7 o'clock. You can ask any questions you want to. You can give me the information if you want to do that, okay?
You buy the coffee, mate?
I'll buy your breakfast, your lunch, and your dinner if you can find me anybody who knows this man.
We have three limiters coming out of the boneyard. We'll need three full crews. On the way here, all you bunch of...
The crowd gravitates to the dispatcher's office, leaving Clint behind.
Two ordinary. On the boat, we have 11:25.
He turns and walks out of the hall. Later at Frank's place.
Chill that sugar down, will you?
Come on with those eggs, Frank. I gotta make the 7 o'clock bus, you hear?
I'm coming.
A young woman walks past the sad, tired people sitting at the counter, squeezing between them in the wall.
That's the one.
She reaches Clint, who's smoking and looking at his watch. He throws down his cigarette in disgust as she steps behind him and to his side.
Can I speak to you?
Sure, go right ahead.
Aware of a man listening behind her, she moves to Clint's other side.
Are you the man who's looking for someone?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I was.
Someone looking for $50?
That's right.
He said for you to come with me, will you?
He said? Who's he?
Are you coming?
Yeah.
He gets off his stool and follows her out. Soon after, she leads him down a ramp at the Barrack Street Wharf, then along a series of planks across the water. Crossing another walkway, she steps onto a small boat, and he follows. She pauses in the bow before the cabin.
It's cold down here by the water.
Yeah.
She leads him downstairs into the cluttered cabin.
Now, what was it you wanted to know?
I want to know if your friend has ever seen this man.
He shows her the photo.
Why?
Because obviously I want to find out about him.
Do something wrong?
No, he did nothing wrong. Nobody's going to get into any trouble. Have you ever seen him?
No.
Come on.
No, I never seen him.
Where is this friend of yours?
He wanted to know why you were looking.
He did, huh? Well, if he wants to know so badly, let him come and ask me.
A man steps down into the cabin.
What are you doing here? Where'd you come from?
Cut it out.
Who are you, a cop?
I'm with the Public Health Service. I'm a doctor.
He grabs a liquor bottle from a cabinet.
Doctor, I want to know who this man is, how he got into the country, what ship he was smuggled off.
Well, I don't want him for $50.
That's all you're going to get. Take it or leave it.
Charlie, I told you not to drink anymore.
I told you yesterday to keep away from him.
Did you bring this man into the country?
He pours a drink.
Because if you did, there's a good chance you're going to die in about 4 days.
Who are you trying to kid?
Nobody. I'm trying to save you. You're a sailor. Did you ever hear of plague?
He drinks.
Plague?
This man died of it yesterday morning.
He's making it up.
I'm not making it up.
No, I don't
think
he's
trying to frame me. I ain't never seen this guy. I ain't been out of port in 10 days, and I can prove it.
Turning to a corner, he puts away the bottle and cup.
Okay. You didn't bring him in or have any contact with him. Then you've got nothing to worry about.
No, wait.
Let him go.
No, I won't.
Get out of here.
You told me yourself, Charlie, that the man was sick when you brought him
here. Why, you stupid little...
Charlie lunges at her, but Clint stops him.
Please, he's a doctor. He ought to know what he's doing.
This is $50. This is anti-plague serum.
Clint holds them out in front of him.
Charlie?
Charlie looks at the woman, softening.
Now roll up your sleeve and start talking. Hold this, will you?
Got him off a tramp out in the Gulf.
Charlie makes a sandwich.
I don't know his name, and I know nothing about him. Swung the whole deal with one of the mates.
What ship?
I don't know.
You know?
It was night. I couldn't see.
What ship?
Give him the shot, Doc, please.
What's the name of that ship?
I said I don't know.
Hurry up,
look, Doc. Sailor, this is the only hypodermic I've gotten. It breaks very easily. Now start talking, or you're going to get into trouble.
Charlie!
All right! It was a Nile Queen.
You sure?
Yeah, I'm sure.
All right, hold still. Roll up the sleeve.
Clint grabs an arm, and the woman rolls up the sleeve.
Now hold still.
As Charlie gets the shot, he eats the sandwich. Later, a float plane lands in the Gulf near a large ship. The captain and a mate watch from the port side.
Bring him aboard. I'm going to finish my breakfast.
Aye, sir.
They part ways near a life preserver labeled Nile Queen. Later, Clint leaves a cabin with the captain.
Couldn't you have been aboard without your knowledge, Captain?
No, he couldn't. This is a waste of your time and mine. The sooner you go over the side, the sooner I can get underway again.
Clint climbs down a ladder to Tom.
Stand by to get underway.
Nothing. Did he tell you anything?
Let's go. You've cost me 2 hours delay already with this heaving,
too. Captain, the man I spoke to was positive the ship was the Nile Queen.
For the last time, I'm telling you, I never saw the man in my life. Anyone who says he was smuggling off my ship is a liar.
A man exposed to pneumonic plague doesn't lie.
I say he did.
All right, Captain.
Is he going to call me a liar,
too? I'm calling you a fool. Okay, I'll get off your ship. But if that man was aboard you...
He finds the crew watching him.
And most of your crew will be dead before you're halfway to San Diego.
I'll worry about that.
The captain runs at Clint, but Tom and a Coast Guard man get between them.
We're in international waters. This man is master of this vessel. We have no authority here.
Come on, let's go.
Climbing down to another deck before Tom. Clint stops when he notices a young Asian man staring at him.
Niyama.
The young man walks off as Tom and the Coast Guard man join Clint. They slowly walk along the deck. Until they reach two black workers, who sit looking away. They continue on, under the heavy gaze of the crew. Paul steps out from below with a few men behind him.
What'd you find out?
Well, from the tracings on those beams, Clint, I can guarantee 150 to 170 rats on this ship.
What did I tell you?
You men hear that? Rats! And they might be carrying plague!
Hey! What's going on down there? Bosun, get those men out of there, all of them! Get back to work!
All right, boys, let's start moving.
No, we want to hear what he's saying.
Yeah, we want to hear. Never mind what he's saying. Get moving.
The bosun shoves some of them.
Shove me!
We shove him back to the deck and jump after him. The bosun rolls out of the fray, and the captain hurries up a ladder to give orders.
Break out the weapons, mister, and stand by!
Stop bluffing, Captain! You've got plague on this ship.
You're inciting my men to mutiny. Now get off of here before I take action.
Your men know it's true. Wasn't there another man on board who died just last week?
I'm the master here, and for the last...
Tom helps the young Asian man bring another Asian man to Clint.
One of your cooks is down with fever. That's just the first one, Captain. Now what are you going to do about it?
What do you want me to do?
Right now, I want to inoculate every man on board. After that, you'll put about and quarantine your ship under my men.
What about the stowaways? I didn't have anything to do with them.
Wouldn't make much difference if you were dead.
Get the equipment, Paul.
Right.
All right, let's get started.
Soon after, the crew is inoculated as Tom questions them.
Sailmaker, you sure these two men got on an Oran?
They must have.
The only place they could have.
What about the other man? Did anybody see his body after he died?
Well, he's the sailmaker. We sewed him up. He might have.
No, I just dumped him over, so.
Agreed.
Secondary infection from the man who died.
Sure, it's the only possible way.
Okay, you can move along. Think we have enough on this fella?
Yes, sir.
Okay, that'll be all for you.
Ah!
You come on and sit down here. Did you ever see these two men who were in the chain locker?
One Asian man turns to another, then nods.
You see them every day.
You see them every day? How come?
He cabin boy. He bring them food.
Okay, let him talk for himself now. You brought him the food every day?
Yes, sir.
Did they ever say anything?
Sure. Food stink. Goodbye.
This boy just kills you, doesn't he? Now, did they... Are you the cook?
Yes, sir.
Oh, wait. Did they ever talk about anything else?
No, sir. Only one time they tell me to tell cook to make shish kebab. Shish kebab? They want a shish kebab.
Shut up.
Yes.
I like
shish kebab.
Yes, I'm sure. And if I knew what shish kebab was, maybe we'd be on a trail or something.
It's lamb on a skewer. Some of the Greek and Armenian restaurants around town serve it. To tell you the truth, I'm rather fond of it myself.
That's it. They call me dirty names. They say when they go ashore, Shard.
You're on shore?
They know the place.
What's the name of the place? Did they say the name of the place?
Clint tries to help.
Makinipa, Singamitsa.
No market to it.
He doesn't know. Just a restaurant.
Okay, run along. Well, I thought maybe we had something there. It might be a little something like that.
Now you're asking me the question?
I suppose we'll have to wind up in a policeman's benefit, but I'll have to.
Later. A police car speeds around a corner onto a side street, then pulls up at a curb. Tom and Clint get out of the back seat and approach the Athena Cafe. Tom checks the name against his notes, then they both go inside. They walk past a balding man who serves two people in a booth, then heads to the counter.
Where's the owner of this joint?
Over here.
Yanni.
Says you do him. Kala.
The server calls to a man with curly hair and glasses behind the counter, who turns from his writing, then sets down his pencil and glasses.
What is it?
You're the proprietor?
Yes.
John Mafferes?
Yes, sir.
You serve Greek food?
Anything you like, gentlemen.
We're from the Public Health Service.
At an unclean place. I passed inspection last month.
No, we're just trying to identify a man, that's all.
You know this man? Has he ever come in your place?
John takes Kochak's photo from Tom and puts his glasses on to peer at it.
What do you want him for? If you don't mind my asking
I'm asking you. Do you recognize him?
He's not across the street. You won't get into any trouble. We just want some information.
I ain't worried.
He had an infection, a contagious disease. We want to find out who he was, where he went, the people he saw.
Sure, sure. I don't know. So many people come here all the time. Maybe my wife. I'll ask her.
Yeah.
He goes to the back.
I got a feeling this is going to be very helpful.
Tom wanders in the same direction and notices a table of men playing cards, who just glance at him before he turns back to Clint.
You know this is hopeless, don't you, Doc? This is about the 15th joint we've been in.
It's 11 by actual count. What can you suggest?
Look, we run the whole story in tonight's paper. His picture, everything. I'll block every road leaving town, cover the bus stations.
Clint smokes, staring at the floor.
No.
You're getting it. Slowly.
You sure make them stubborn up where you come from.
That's right.
In the back.
It's the man that fella Poldy brought in the other night.
Yes, Kochak.
Poldy and Fitch sit nearby.
The one that ate like a field hand. What about him?
They asked me if I know him.
For pity's sake, go and tell him and stop fussing at me.
It's Board of Health. They say he's sick.
Oh, that Board of Health was here last month. We paid for our license, so I don't know how we did it.
But they say he's sick, bad sick.
So am I sick.
But this is contagious.
Contagious? You tell them to go and mind their own business. We don't know nothing about it. Don't stand there. Go and tell them.
But the law. We've got to obey the law.
We've never seen them.
I don't know. I don't like it.
Oh, John, I got a headache that's fit to kill me. You don't go out there and tell them that we don't know nothing about this and get them out of this place. I'm going to do it myself. Stop all this nonsense. Go on and tell them.
Okay, Rita. Okay. I'll tell them.
As the wife drinks some medicine, John returns to Tom and Clint.
He doesn't know him either. Why don't you leave the picture? He may come sometime.
I don't think he'll be around for a while.
When Tom and Clint leave, John glances back at his wife. Tom and Clint get back in the police car. As they head off, Blackie approaches on the sidewalk.
Good day, now, Blackie.
A little person stops him.
In the back.
They found Poldy, huh?
Yes. I tipped them off where to go.
Did you take care of that other matter, Pat?
I stayed all night, watched the house.
What happened?
She came home early, not a peep out of her.
Good.
He takes out some money.
Here you are, Pat.
No, thanks, no. Come on. Blackie, no.
He stuffs it in Pat's shirt pocket.
God bless you, Pat. God bless you.
Pat runs to another newspaper vendor.
You got away from there. This is my beat. Get away.
Chasing him away, Pat sells another man a paper. Inside, Blackie joins Fitch, Poldy, and a younger man, who all stand when he arrives.
Blackie, I found him. See, I found him.
Pat told me how you found him. What's that smell in here? You been trying something on your hair again?
No, Blackie, I ain't put nothing on.
You touch that yet?
No, Blackie.
They all sit, except for the younger man, who stands behind them. Taking a stuffed grape leaf from Fitch's plate, Blackie starts eating.
Hiya, Blackie.
Hello, Poldy. What's the matter?
Sick, don't feel so good.
You felt good enough to stay out last night and run me all over town.
Gave him a little bit of trouble, huh, Poldy?
He shrugs weakly.
Who's this?
My kid brother, Vincent.
Let's lose him.
I told you I don't feel good. I need somebody with me.
We're with you, Poldy. Blow out of here, kid.
Who asked you, Curly?
Hit the road, be boring.
The objectionable Fitch.
Blackie sets down the grape leaf and holds out his hand.
Nice to know you, Vince.
Vince shakes it.
Thanks, Blackie.
You want to do Blackie a favor, kid?
Yeah, I guess so.
Run out and get me a scratch sheet, huh? Maybe I got something I can put a couple of bucks on for you.
He gives Vince some money.
Thanks, Blackie. Thanks, Blackie.
Vince leaves.
You don't feel good, huh, Poldy? I got a pretty good doctor. Maybe he can take a look at you.
I'll be all right. I'm just sort of cold in my head. I ought to be in bed.
What? You're always bellyaching, that's why.
Nobody asked you.
Leave him alone, Fitch. Maybe he's got a touch of swamp fever or something. Look, Poldy, I wouldn't have had him bother you. Only I wanted to ask...
About Kochak, I never should have brung him that night. I'm sorry, Blackie, but you got your dough and everything.
I wasn't thinking about him, Poldy. But now that you bring it up,
tell me... He was nothing, honest.
He was nothing. Just enough to have every cop in town looking for him. They're grabbing every guy in sight, whether he's got a record or not.
Yeah. I even picked up the master criminal here.
Why do you suppose they're doing that, Foley?
I don't know, Blackie. It's like I told Fitz, he was a cousin of mine, but I don't know nothing else about him.
Some cousin. He might have killed you if I hadn't been there.
Yeah, fine cousin.
I thank you, Blackie, but he didn't bring nothing into the country. I mean, he was...
What made you say that, Foley?
I don't know, Blackie. I just thought that maybe the cops, or maybe you thought that... I gotta get out of here and get some water.
Sit down, Foley. Here's some water. What made you say that?
I don't know, Blackie. I just thought that you figured that...
Why would I figure that?
I don't know. But there was nothing at all. Can't you believe me?
Why should he?
Don't talk like that, Fitch. All Poldy said was he didn't bring nothing in. Poldy ought to know the guy was his cousin.
Blackie puts a hand on Poldy's back.
He was going to stay with you, wasn't he, Poldy? Left his stuff with you?
I don't know where he was going to stay.
Poldy tries to stand.
Sit down, Poldy. I'm talking to you. It ain't polite to get up.
Blackie checks the tag inside his shirt and shoves Poldy's head down to look closer.
I thought there was something funny about that shirt. La Pere, Lisbon.
He lets him go, and Poldy puts his head in his hand.
When was you in Lisbon last?
You like the Blackie, Poldy. He don't like to be lied to. You know what I mean, Poldy? He don't like it.
He just had a couple of shirts. You can have them all.
That's what I smelled. What do you got on?
Nothing. I ain't got nothing on.
You're lying again. Perfume. Dodo go out last night. I'm disappointed in you. I treated you like a friend, and look at you.
I ain't lying. Honest, I ain't.
See why I'm always right, Fitch? Because I never trust nobody. You make an exception, and... You remember how it was when we took Poldy in? Share and share.
Yeah, that's right, Blackie. What's yours is mine.
Only friend Poldy doesn't believe that. He's like everybody else, just out for himself.
No, that isn't true.
What am I
going to
do with you, Poldy? What would you do if you was in my shoes and a friend double-crossed you? How would you?
A woman approaches them.
Hi, Poldy. Hi, Anthony. Blackie, can I see you for just a minute?
Sure, baby. Anything wrong?
No, nothing.
As Blackie steps away with her, Poldy hunches over the table.
What's the matter with you? Why don't you tell him you're...
I don't know nothing, I tell you.
Blackie, honey, I just gotta have $100.
Sure, honey, if you really...
Vince returns.
I'll be with you in a minute, kid.
He goes to Poldy and Fitch.
I thought that dame gave him the brush.
Poldy looks back at him balefully, then runs out the back. Vince blocks Fitch from chasing him and bolts. Blackie runs and stops at the back door with Fitch.
See, Fitch, didn't I tell you he's been holding out on us?
Like, I didn't mean to let him get away.
That's
I
all
just
right,
for
Fitch. Don't get sweaty. Where's he gonna go that we can't find him? Come on.
They go back inside. That night, two police cars drive onto the Barrack Street wharf. Getting out of one of the cars.
Car 17.
Clint leaves Tom down the ramp.
Car 7.
He was tied up right off the end of the dock here this morning.
Car 12, Captain Warren. Captain Warren, emergency. Woman sick.
Not hearing the call, Tom follows Clint across the planks to where Charlie's boat was.
Captain Warren.
A short man approaches them, and they talk.
Please acknowledge.
The woman called him Charlie. Doesn't that mean anything?
Not to me, mister. Now, I've got a nephew named Charlie,
but... I'm sure he's a nice fella. That's great.
Well, I don't know. That was my last idea.
That Warren!
What?
They turn to the cars.
Carl!
What is it?
The woman! Sick! Fever case! Emergency call!
They run back across the planks and up the ramp. Later... People mill around a two-story apartment house. Two policemen hurry past it and along an alley. Then mount the stairs leading to another apartment house. Where they stride past more people to Tom.
The boys in patrol car picking up the husband, Captain. I'll have him here in a few minutes.
Tom turns inside to where Clint and Paul step out of a room taking off gloves.
I'll have to quarantine the whole apartment. Get them inoculated.
Call in and tell Monahan I want a detail here right away. Cover the entrance yourself. Nobody in or out but the husband.
Yes, sir.
No chance of a mistake?
Nah, you couldn't miss it. Well, Paul, I want all that bedding burned after you get her out.
That door.
Yes, sir.
Paul goes back in the room.
What about the death certificate? It's got to be filed.
The doctor put down a tentative diagnosis of pneumonia with complications. That'll do for now.
How about the body?
I'll have the board help take care of it.
Happy.
John arrives.
What do you do here? Clear these people out of here.
He approaches Clint.
That's my wife. Call
Rita?
Paul steps out of the room in his mask and gloves. John turns again to Clint.
Where is she? What you do?
Clint stops him from going in.
Let me see my wife.
I can't let you go in there.
What you do to her?
Your wife is dead.
Dead? Dead?
Rita. She can't be. You lie.
A policeman stops him from going in.
She's dead, mister.
This afternoon, the doctor, she said she just don't feel good.
I'm sorry.
He wanders past them, staring into space.
Remember me, Mathers? We showed you a picture of a man and asked if you knew him. You lied to us. Who was he?
I don't know.
If you told us the truth, there's a chance your wife might not have died.
Who
was he?
I don't know. I don't know.
Look, Mathers, I want to know about this man. He had the disease that killed your wife. Now, who is he?
Tom grabs John's lapels.
Killed my wife?
Yes. Now, who is he?
Kochak. His name was Kochak. I don't know him. Poldi brought him the other night.
Who's Poldi?
Rita Serp.
Who's Poldi? Where does he live?
Gloria Hotel, I guess.
Tom lets John slump onto a chair.
Come on, there's nothing you can do but him. Let's go.
Tom leads Clint out. Heading down the stairs, they meet Ben at the bottom.
Ben, have him work with Daphne. This place is quarantined. Get the address from a Ferris restaurant, quarantine that. Then try and get a list of everybody who's been in there in the past 3 days.
Yes, sir.
You know how many people have been in
there? It's getting pretty rugged.
Oh, well, look, you stay here and take charge, will you, Ben? Send for any help you need.
Right.
Nobody in or out. Nobody. Right. Come on.
Tom and Clint jump into a police car.
Gloria Hotel.
It speeds off, and Neff, the reporter, watches as he steps up to one of the policemen.
Gloria Hotel, huh?
Thanks.
He walks off, and another policeman closes a large wooden door to the street. Police cars head around a corner and stop at the Gloria Hotel. Tom and Clint get out with other officers.
Nobody in or out. Nobody. Come on.
They enter a bar on the first floor, and the proprietor steps out to meet them.
What do you want?
I'm looking for a fellow named Poldy. He's not up in his room.
Where's his room?
All right, follow me.
They do, with two officers following. Upstairs, they search the room.
Never mind why I want him, I want him.
I swear to you, Captain, if I know the guy has a record, I never take him in. I run a clean establishment.
Yeah, I know, nothing but retired millionaires and honeymooners.
Oh, no, Cap. You know I wouldn't have nobody
in here. But we pulled three hoodlums out of here last month. Now, who knew this man?
Nobody, Cap. Honest, nobody. The guy just comes in for a room and I...
They crowd him.
Now, just a minute. I just do remember.
He just does remember.
A couple of guys were looking for him today.
Who were they?
No, I don't know. Honest, I don't know. You got to believe me.
Why? Yeah. Come on, let's get out of here.
Downstairs, an officer tries to escort Neff out.
Why don't you take your big hands off me and knock off?
I'm warning you, Neff. You hear me?
I hear you. That's the trouble. I can't seem to tune you out.
All right, that's enough. Oh, Neff. I didn't know you lived here, too.
I'm ready for your statement on this story now, Doctor.
What story is that, Neff?
Oh, cut it out. You think I've been walking around with my head in a bag? You and the Public Health Service turning this town upside down? A murdered hoodlum, a ship in quarantine, and now a woman dead? An idiot could figure it out.
You qualify. What do you figure?
I figure the guy had smallpox or cholera or something like that. And I want to know why this story wasn't released to the press.
Listen,
Wait
Neff.
A minute, Warren. Now, look, Neff. It isn't smallpox, and it isn't cholera. It's plague, pneumonic plague.
Neff stares at him.
Plague?
That's why we can't let you have the story.
You can't let me have it?
That's right.
With the chance of an epidemic?
I knew you guys were crazy, but...
Wait a minute, Neff, wait a minute.
Wait for what? Somebody else to die? Not much. You've already wasted a day and a half.
I'm sorry, but I can't let you print this
you
story.
You can't let me print it. Since when have you been making
the rules? I represent the public health service.
Well, I represent the public, and they've got a right to know what's going on. And no two-bit civil servant is going
regardless
to stop
of your opinion, I've got to do what I think is best.
Did you do what you thought was best for that woman who just died? If the doctor had known what was going on, couldn't he have saved her? Couldn't he?
I don't know.
You don't know. And because you don't know, you don't want anybody else to know.
Well, there's a chance
you
we can
bet there is. And don't think for a minute that everybody in this town isn't going to get it.
Oh, drop it. If your editor's got the story, let him go ahead and print it.
Well, my editor doesn't have it, but he's going to get it.
Oh, he doesn't have it, eh? What do you know?
He motions for the officer to come over.
Take it.
A pleasure.
Oh, wait a minute. Hey, Warren, what do you think you're trying to
pull? He speaks to no one.
What's the charge, Warren?
Loitering, public nuisance, anything you like.
You're crazy. I'll have your badge
it's
for
getting
this, Warren. You know I can do it.
Take him out.
You'll be walking a beat.
No!
When Neff is taken away... Clint steps up to Tom and two officers.
If I'd been busted by every newspaper man to try to get my bars, I'd be mopping floors in the Hall of Justice years ago. Come on.
Tom walks out, but Clint stays behind with the officers.
Can that reporter really make trouble for him?
Trouble? Where you been living, mister?
That newspaper wanted to put the pressure on him. He'd be lucky if he could get a job mopping floors. Let's go, Bill.
They leave Clint thoughtful. So it took someone to die for Tom to put himself on the line and go beyond the call of duty to help get this case solved. The race against time continues in the conclusion. Next time on Movies for the Blind. I mentioned at the start of this episode Zero Mostel, who's playing Fitch. His career wouldn't reach its peak until more than a decade later, with Fiddler on the Roof, A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, and of course, The Producers. But before that, a couple years after this film, his career was stopped dead when he was named as a communist during the McCarthy hearings, which he himself participated in 1955. While his testimony turned out to be pretty entertaining to those who weren't asking the questions, he did take the fifth and did not name names, unlike his director here, Elia Kazan, who preserved his career in the short term but was castigated by many in the film community far longer than anything Mostel suffered. For more information and links about the movies, about description, and how to subscribe, check the blog, moviesfortheblind.com, where you can also find out about this podcast's Creative Commons license. The movies are from the Internet Archive, which is also the host for this podcast, so please support universal access to human knowledge by visiting and donating at www.archive.org. Thank you for downloading and for listening. Be back next week. Take care.